Okay. Well, there's a lot of pages here. The topic for this evening is we discussed this a little bit, but now we're going to go into a little bit more. This is Jamunacharya, who is the spiritual master of Ramanujacharya, gave teachings on Ramayana. You know what is Ramayana?
Yeah.
What is it?
It's
a Rama story. The story of Rama, right. So, Jamunacharya extensively taught about Ramayana, saying that there's 18 main themes throughout the whole of Ramayana. And then he taught that to his disciple, Sri Shailapurna, who thoroughly instructed Jamunacharya's teachings to Ramanujacharya. There's a nice episode of how that happened. And then Ramanujacharya in turn taught his disciples and followers. And they in turn wrote according to those 18. And then nearly a century later, Govindaraj took all those writings and assembled them in his own writing and in commentary on Ramayana. And that's where this is drawn from. In Balakanda, the end of the fifth sarga, comes Govindaraja's explanation. So what the 18 themes are, there's Sanskrit terms, and we'll be discussing some of those Sanskrit terms, and these themes manifest themselves in Ramayana. Could you not do that? That's distracting. So if you could just sit still. That, I don't know, that's maybe too much to ask. But. But if you can, you're normally like calm, very calm, but if you get restless, you can be restless over there somewhere instead of right in front of me. You get the idea. Sorry, I don't mean to pick on you. But you're front and center. Okay, so 18 themes. And 14 of the themes are specific to, which is a major part of Ramayana, specific to the process of surrender. And we'll start with the first one. You get a little bit of a picture from the first one. We have in ISKCON, we have a reference about surrender. Let's see if some of you know what that reference to surrender is. There's six limbs of surrender found in Nectar Devotion and taught extensively also by Bhaktivinoda Thakur in the songs, Sharanagati. That's not just his term. That's a term that Vaishnavas in general use. Sharanagati. So, from Padma Purana, there's two and two makes two plus two plus two makes 2 plus 2 plus 2 equals. Yeah, okay. Thank you. So there's six principles of surrender. Who knows what they are? We'll do this a little differently. You know what they are. Does anybody else know what they are? You don't have to say them. I'm just asking how many know what they are. I see two hands. I see three hands. Okay. They really make good sense. Can we close the door? Because this. Got it to the left, got it to the right, got it to the front. woof, woof. You hear the word surrender and he starts barking. You have some idea? You've heard these at all? The first two are really common sense. Accept things favorable, reject things unfavorable. Backwards and forwards, forwards and backwards. That which is favorable to bhakti, you accept. That which is unfavorable to bhakti, you push to the side. That's two down and four more to go. So here's another one that's kind of very obvious. Protection. There's four animal propensities, and the strongest of them: eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. So those who are surrendered to the personality of Godhead, they look to the personality of Godhead for protection. Raksha. Protection. Rakshishititi vishvaso. And then maintenance. We look to the Lord for maintenance. Doesn't mean we are lazy, but He is ultimately our maintainer. So that's four. Only two left. What are the two that are left? What are one of the two that's left? Humility. Humility. Dainya. Or yeah, karpanye is another Sanskrit term. Humility. You can't surrender if you're not humble. So if you're humble, it makes it easier to surrender. The final one? Atmanikshepa or Atmanivedana. Dedication of everything. So during our discussions about Ramayana, we heard the name of one person. Relief. For the kids, so they don't have to sit here and be restless. So, who is the person in Ramayana who symbolizes or demonstrated full surrender? You know. Hanuman was, he was fully surrendered, but the one that came to the, Vibhishan. He makes this declaration. When Ram accepts him, he then makes the declaration, my wealth, my home, my everything, it's yours to be used in your service. And he followed through with his words. That's how he lived his life. Okay. There are others. But so the commentators on Ramayana, the Sri Vaishnava commentators on Ramayana, have a different sequence and way of explaining Sharanagati. And that is I'll read. The sambandha of the living entities, sambandha, relationship, they are eternal servants. That's their explanation of sambandha. And then the prayojana is being engaged in that devotional service. And then the abhideya, the process, is the process of surrender. Sambandha abhideya prayojana. I'll do it again. Who we are in relation to the Lord is we're His servants. The mature stage of that is we're engaged in His service. And the bridge to get there, the means to get there, is saranagati. So, their understanding is Ramayana is a treatise taking the teachings of saranagati and putting it in life, in the pastimes, in Ramayana. Our understanding goes like this. The understanding given by Rupa Goswami and the followers of Lord Chaitanya. Sambandha is the relationship of all things with the source of emanation. Abhideya is acting within that relationship of all things, especially the living entities, in relation to the source. And Prayojana is prema. The mature stage of devotional service is prema bhakti, or prema rasa. That's Prayojana. And then there's different rasas amongst the prema stage. And then there's that whole science of Prayojana. So back again, this is from the context of the means to achieve the goal, which is being engaged in devotional service, is Sharanagati. Sharanagati is describing, Ramayana is describing or illustrating Sharanagati, the process of surrender in different ways. Now, how does that fit with our Gaudiya tradition? The Gaudiya tradition says, we'll take two resources. Boys will be boys. Okay. Sanatan Goswami and Bhaktivinoda Thakur, those are two authorities, acharyas, that touch this topic of Sharanagati. In Sanatan Goswami refers to one of Brahma's prayers. Brahma's prayers come in Canto 10, Chapter 14. Brahma's prayers come after the stealing of the cat, Brahma Vimohan Leela, the stealing of the calves and coward boys and putting them in the cave and the whole thing. Then he offers prayers. So in his prayers, text number 8 is this tate nukampam susamikshamano. This is taking full shelter of the personality of Godhead. That's our, Sanatana Goswami refers to it as one of our Bhagavatam teachings on the importance of taking shelter of the personality of Godhead. Regardless of what's going on in the world that's ever changing, something that provides, it epitomizes taking shelter is what Brahma says in that prayer. Whatever's going on, you don't invest yourself in problem solving with what's going on. You keep your consciousness focused on taking shelter of the personality of Godhead, knowing that by so doing, you'll go back to Godhead. You inherit the kingdom of the person unto whom you're surrendering. That's the kingdom of God. You don't become like, put it in your pocket. You got the title on the kingdom of God in your vault or something. But it means you're connected to the personality of Godhead eternally. You're passing through the temporary, keeping focused on the eternal, in the mood of taking shelter. And then you can deal with whatever the temporary that comes, happiness and distress and the mix. Stay fixed on the personality of Godhead. That's essential. According to Sanatana Goswami, in his writings, this is one of his celebrated writings, is Brihat Bhagavatamrita. So it's illuminated there, or elaborated there. And I'm going to read something about from Bhaktivinoda Thakur. He makes a connection between faith and Sharanagati. So listen, it's nice. The firm faith one develops after hearing topics of Hari from the mouth of saintly persons is called Shraddha. As soon as Shraddha is awakened, a little bit of Sharanagati also is awakened. Yes? So faith, and there's some submission proportionate to. As soon as both Shraddha and Sharanagati are almost the same, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur writes something quite similar, where he says there's 9 stages of bhakti, from preliminary faith to prema, and one way of describing what those 9 are, they're different stages of faith. Faith and faith and faith of different names, different stages, up to prema. It's like full-blown faith. So where you can also say full atmanivedana, full surrender of everything, full surrender, like Vibhishan or others. Now here's his commentary on nectar devotion, specific this anukulyasya sankalpa. Those are elements of surrender or sharanagati. The acceptance of that which is favorable and the rejection of that which is unfavorable, anukulyasya sankalpa, pratikulyasya varjanam, are not direct limbs or angas of Shuddha Bhakti. What are they if they're not limbs? Rather, they are aspects of faith, which is characterized by surrender, which in turn bestows qualifications for bhakti. So let's do that one again. Because this is the context as Ramayana teaches Sharanagati. This is Bhaktivinoda Thakur's elaborating. When you hear topics of Krishna from good sources, then some faith in Krishna arises. And as that faith arises, then some surrender to Krishna arises. And that surrender is bhakti. And that is a limb of bhakti. That surrender is a limb of bhakti. And faith is not directly a limb of Shuddha Bhakti, but it brings about or is characterized by Sharanagati, which bestows bhakti or qualification for bhakti. Having firm faith in the scripture is called Shraddha. The purport of all the scripture is that if one does not surrender to Krishna, he is full of fear, and if he is surrendered to Krishna, he has no fear. You're surrendered to Krishna, you're protected. That's one of the 6 angas, is you feel protected. He is your protector. Goptritve. Not Goptritve. Rakshishatiti Vishvaso. He's your protector. So, you're protected, you're without fear, no protection, guaranteed there'll be fear. Therefore, the development of faith, Shraddha, is evident by the presence of symptoms of Sharanagati, surrender. So they're connected, but they're not. The essence, he's saying something quite similar that Ramayana is saying, or the Acharyas commenting on Ramayana is saying. The Sharanagati is surrender is something that's part of the bhakti process itself. It's nourished by hearing about Krishna, which gives rise to faith, which is symptomized by surrender. I guess it's, you know, supposing you don't know that sequence, that's okay. Just go on hearing about Krishna. Or hearing of, in this case, hearing about the Ramayana. In Prabhupada told this story, I've heard it in lectures several times, from the time that he was very young, whenever there was a public gathering about anything, there was always part of the public gathering about anything was a telling of Ramayana or a telling of some story from Mahabharata. It is part of the culture. It's not anymore. Now there's all kinds of things that go on without telling of Ramayana or Mahabharata. But by that hearing, it has two effects. It cleanses material contamination and it awakens attraction for transcendence. And with that, so that faith in transcendence precipitates sharanagati or taking shelter. So it diminishes the quarrel tendency of Kali Yuga, because people are brought together by their dependence upon the personality of Godhead and lend themselves to cooperating with the interests of the personality of Godhead, which is diminished like anything in Kali Yuga, in part because the hearing of Krishna Katha is diminished like anything. There's a byproduct. There's a social dimension that comes from hearing. Aside from the social dimension, there's faith. And with faith comes surrender, in the sense of being protected, not having to be an animal protecting yourself. So that's the first of, let's see how far we get, but the items of surrender. Ramayana is a treatise explaining the process of surrender, Sharanagati. And so one more time, the Sri Vaishnava's view, Sharanagati is the means to attain your relationship with the Supreme Lord, which is the goal, Prayojana. Sambandha, Avideya, Prayojana. Whoops, this way. Sambandha, Avideya, Prayojana. Then second theme, there's some qualification of the person to surrender unto. And then there's a qualification of the person to do the surrendering. That's being taught in Ramayana. And so here comes two Sanskrit terms. Saralata. Saralata means simplicity. This is the one who's surrendering. Excuse me, this is the one that you're surrendering unto. Ram didn't make distinction. Okay, if you were born in this family or if you're something, something, something. Those who were, that he accepted as devotees were in lots of different even species of life. Monkeys, bears, squirrels. You know, he was very liberal. Irrespective of background. So simplicity, shelter of anyone, shelter to, giving shelter to anyone. Now that's not normally how we think of simplicity, but not looking at external qualifications. This is the one of the classics is Vibhishan. When Vibhishan came, he had enough culture and presence to not just like push his way. He, according to Ramayana, he stayed hovering in the air with his four ministers who were like himself, righteous, noble, and standing by virtue. So he said, ask Ram if he's willing to accept me. I want to surrender to him. Now kings would accept somebody, surrender anyways. That's just the nature of a king. But the ministers were not so sure. Maybe this, maybe that, maybe the other thing. Maybe he's got a motive. Maybe he knows that Ravana is going to lose and he wants to become the next king. Maybe he's self-motivated. There's so many maybes. How can we trust him? Maybe he's a spy. Maybe. And everyone, no one was like saying yes. Hanuman said yes. Hanuman said, seeing his face, we can tell his character, hearing his voice. So supposing he does want to become king, what, is that a disqualification? See, he attempted to help Ravan come to his senses, and he wasn't able to do it. So he had no service. He's here. And besides that, I know that Ram has already accepted him because he surrendered to him. And so Ram says like that, one having ones taking shelter of me, I'll protect them. Let's read what it says. Lord Ram said, the seeker of refuge, Sharanagata, that's the one who wants shelter in me, need not feel friendly towards the protector, nor express friendship in word or conduct. He need not be endowed with all the excellences that the doctrine of refuge demands of the seeker. It is quite enough that the Sharanagata should join his palms in prayer as a gesture of surrender. Grace descends on him, and at once all sorrow falls away. Even if one does not join the palms in prayer, it is enough if one announces that one is helpless and needs help, or if one utters the words that sound like prayer. Even if these three elements are absent, turning in the direction of the Savior is enough. Let the supplicant be our direct foe, yet we may not harm him. It is quite enough if the surrender of self is made to me but once. Even then it is not ordinary to express it in word or by act. Submission with the mind will do. Let a man but think once, I am yours. Service to you is my sole reward. This prayer is enough. I shall then stand between him and any evil that threatens from any being. This is my pledge, never and in no circumstance to be broken. This gift of fearlessness I give to those who come to him who seeks refuge in me. If Ravana himself were to come to me, and without restoring Sita, pray for my protection, I am prepared to grant it to him. If this is not Vibhishan but Ravana in disguise, even then I would give him sanctuary. That's Saralata. So then it goes into Jatayu, Guha, Sugriva, and many others. That's his Saralata. So that's one of the teachings of Ramayana, that the person to surrender to is one who is open like that, without the material qualification, just this mood of submission and surrender. And the second, according to the Sri Vaishnava Acharyas, is Shakti, or I guess it's principally Jamunacharya. Shakti, he has the power to give protection. He doesn't just say and doesn't protect, but he has the power. He has the intention and has the power. Those are persons to surrender unto. Here's an example. When Vibhishan approached Lord Ram, Lord Ram said, let this Rakshasa be the most wicked or let him be virtuous. Either way, what can he do to me? This is Ram about Vibhishan. Do you think that he can do any harm to me, or to anyone that has taken refuge in me, or to anyone that has taken refuge in such a devotee? I can destroy all the Rakshasas on earth, and also all the Danavas, Yakshas, Pishachas, and all the other creatures merely with the tip of my little finger, if I so choose. I need no weapons. The other fingers, I don't need their help either. Just a little finger, just a tip of my little finger. What to speak of these puny rakshasas in Lanka? The thought of slaying them has not yet entered my mind. When it does, these rakshasas will no more be seen. That's an example of Shakti. Or, when he killed the demons in the Dandak forest, the 14,000, or the demons in his sojourn with Vishvamitra indicate his unparalleled Shakti. So he has the means to give protection. So there's Saralata and Shakti. That's the one who's giving shelter. Go ahead, say it. Whatever you need to do. Another characteristic of one who gives shelter is they feel gratitude, even for the smallest service. Another characteristic of a person worthy of taking shelter is they keep their word. And here's in the Aranyakanda section, he says to Sita, I will let go of my life, you and even Lakshmana, but I will never let go of an oath that I have given to my devotees. This is not at all clear. There's a devotee that helped me prepare this. Well, I'll just detail it. For the whole of the visits to Ayodhya, then Chitrakoot, then the Aranyakanda and Kishkindakanda, one devotee kind of coordinated the research of multiple commentaries in Tamil language. So his name is Shamakund, lives in Bangalore, and he just immersed himself in Ramayana. But there's a wealth of commentaries from Sri Vaishnavacharya's, not yet translated into English. So a team of some 15 people spent 1,500 hours total translating all this stuff, and then it all got funneled to him, and he assembled it primarily. I don't know how he did everything. His family and a job and sadhana and people he looks after, and he did this too. So he helped me prepare this. He sent this to me just today. So I'm not familiar with the text. That's why I'm stumbling a little bit. Sorry. And there's some things here I don't understand why they're there. That's a little explanation of why it's going a little slowly right now. So now there's some characteristics of those who take shelter. One who takes shelter unto, and then those who take shelter. And it sounds similar, but it's different. So Sheshatvam is one. Sheshatvam is the mood of servitude. And a nice example of that is Lakshman. And Lakshman says to Ram, when we were growing up, I observed how Dasarath would anticipate everything that you need. In fact, as a father, the transcendental father of Ram, the transcendental Supreme Lord, 24/7. His thought was with Ram. He was so attached to Ram, he would just call him just to see him. Then he would see him and say, okay. But, you know, whatever it was, Ram should not lack anything. And his mind was always absorbed as a loving father and his, the needs of his son. So Lakshman had observed how his father, their father, Dasarath, was absorbed. And then when Ram went to the forest, Lakshman also absorbed himself like his father, like he saw his father doing. So he said, in this way, Ram says, in this way, because of the presence of you, Lakshman, I'm not feeling the absence of my father. I'm feeling looked after, just like our father looked after me. So it's the mood of a servant and is not just waiting. I mean, one of the pictures I have of Hanuman is he's like this. You know, there's Sitaram Lakshman, and then Hanuman is just some service. There he goes. There he goes. He's waiting for the indication, and Lakshman is anticipating what his needs are, and always absorbed in service to Ram. He has his moods and things, but that's his meditation. Even when he exhibits his moods of anger or something, it's all centered on his love for Ram, wanting to be in service to Ram. There's nothing else for him. So, Sheshatvam. Here's Lakshman speaking to Ram when he wants to go with him to the forest. You may have a happy, undisturbed time with Mother Sita during your journey in the forest, and I shall do all the necessary works when you are awake as well as when you are sleeping. Sheshatvam. And this is a living entity's relationship with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. There's this description of, we discussed this, that the meaning of Lakshmana's name is connected with Lakshmi, the goddess of fortune. Lakshmana is derived from Lakshmi. But the fortune of Lakshmana was not material wealth. The fortune of Lakshman was his service, abundant wealth of service. And the other characteristic for a devotee is para-tantriyam. Para-tantriyam. Akinchanatvam. Akinchana means what? Akinchana? Huh? Yeah, Akinchana. I possess nothing. But then the opposite. Ananya Gatitvam. I have nothing but you're my full shelter. I don't have any other shelter but you. For myself, I have nothing. You're my only shelter. I don't have any other shelter. Exclusive shelter. It's in Rupa Goswami's writings. Bhakti. I probably picked the wrong topic for this evening. Bhakti is exclusive. Love is exclusive. There is one object of love. So one of the wonderful things... One of the wonderful things about love for Krishna is, because everything comes from Krishna, if one exclusively takes shelter in Krishna, there's love for all of what's of Krishna. Universal love comes from love for Krishna, but love for Krishna is exclusive. There isn't another object that's the source of everything. There's only one entity, one person, that's the source of everything else. So when ananya gati tvam, gati means goal or destination, gati. Gatitvam is the, having the quality of goal or destination. Ananya gatitvam, there is no other goal or destination. And I have no other shelter. Akinchana tvam. So I'm just going to read. Both Vibhishan and Bharata particularly exhibited these qualities. The mood of a servant, or the mood of servitude, should be such that one should not identify with one's pleasure as different from that of the Lord's pleasure. So we heard, we've been hearing several times, when Sita desired something on her own interest, apart from the interest of Ram, the deer. Oh, Ram, look at that deer. Can you get it for me? I'd like to be the enjoyer of that object. So, for the surrendered soul, there isn't some interest other than the Supreme Lord's service. I mean, this is... it's in Ramayana, and it's in our life of devotion. It's to come once again to that stage. We'll say, in the associates of the Personality of Godhead, because we've been spending so much time with Krishna in Vrindavan, the Brijbasis, they don't know anything else. They don't want to know anything else. They do all the varieties of activity in life are part of their life. They do this and that and the other. They have families. They have occupations. They do things. And there's only one thing in all of that. Like a nice description is those that were not Yashoda and Nanda, they did their household duties totally enraptured in thought of Krishna. Of course, they had the wives, for example. They had their husbands. They had their children. But to them, Krishna was everything for them. They had more affection for Krishna than their own children, which is not normal. You have more affection for your children. You may have affection for others. In Vrindavan, the affection is to Krishna. So as they were doing their duties, cleaning, cooking, this and that, it's to make it nice for Krishna, because Krishna may come. Or Shavari. She was just absorbed. She was following the instruction of her preceptor to do this, but she was just absorbed in anticipating Ram may come today, and did that for years. Who knows how many years? Every day. Full anticipation. Everything must be very clean, everything this, everything that, in anticipation of Ram may come. My teacher said he'll come, so he'll come. Maybe today is the day. Who knows? Maybe today Krishna will walk through the door. Who knows? Or maybe today when I'm doing my chanting, I'll actually hear the sound of Krishna's name properly, and that'll be manifest in my heart. The eagerness, so that's the characteristic of one who is surrendering. Lakshman said to Ram, this is in relation to the building of the cottage at Padmavati. O descendant of Kakatsu, shutstu. Kakat kakutsta. Kakutsta. I am but a dependent. As long as you are here, even if that were be for 100 years or eternity, I will be submissive to you. Therefore, you tell me a place that is delightful for you. My existence is not like your existence. You are independent, but I am dependent. In this world of variety, nobody wants dependency, and so you have not awarded it to anyone. But I am always desiring complete dependency on you. I am a dependent entity. Dependent entity doesn't mean you don't have free will and feelings and all of everything that's human emotion, but that sense of full dependency, that's the Sharanagata person. And it's extreme, but one of the indications that I really appreciated in reading all these commentaries from 10th Canto is the residents of Vrindavan are entitled to be residents of Vrindavan because of the degree of absorption they have, the intensity of absorption they have in their particular mood of love for Krishna. So different for different personalities. But the intensity of their love is insuperable. There's nothing like it anywhere. And anyone that came from outside of Vrindavan that experienced it understood the same. Uddhava understood it, Brahma understood it, and so on. Narada understood it. What's being extended to us is not just like fanatical or extremism. It's a maturity and degree of love that's so full and so rich that even others that have achieved love of God are moved to the point of their complete humility, wanted to take birth in whatever, so some particle of dust from the feet of these residents of Vrindavan can touch my head, and I can be benedicted by the dust from their feet. And that's extreme, but it's that the quality of love. So now, back to Ramayana, the quality of love of these ideal servants of Ram, who is very generous, very kind, very this and very that. But there's reason for their taking shelter of him. And his reciprocation is completely full. I was just reading when Lakshman wanted Ram to not accept what Dasaras said, and this and that and the other thing and the other thing, and he had raising his bow in the air and his sword in the air and waving, ready to just smash anybody that would oppose Ram becoming king. And Ram didn't yell at him, he just hugged him and said, I know that you're speaking this way out of your love for me, but we can't do any of these things. And just like his words, because of the love that Lakshman had, he calmed down instantly. Because the main feature was his love for Ram. And when Ram indicated, don't go left, go right, he's ready to go left instead of right. Then it was, I've got to go with you. No, you can't come with me because I've got to go with you. I've got to go with you. All right, you come with us. So there was reciprocation. It wasn't just, hey, look at, you're surrendering to me, you got to do what I say. There's a loving relationship in mutual regard. Fully dependent. The Lord is always fully independent, whereas all the jivas, for all stretches of time, place, and circumstance, are fully dependent on the Supreme Lord. But because the living entity considers himself to be the independent doer of things, it leads to ignorance. To know that whatever a living entity is doing is by the sanction of the Lord and for the Lord is true self-realization. So, Lakshman, in one sense, he's playing the part of one who has that mood, but in fact he has that mood. So he's illustrating to us that mood of the Sharanagata. Here's another nice example. Another nice example is Hanuman, as he's preparing to make his jump across Lanka, and his mind is fixed on one thing, find Sita. Two words. And like an arrow shot from Ram's bow, find Sita. Just like an arrow released by Raghava would fly, I too will proceed with the speed of the wind to reach Lanka, ruled by Ravana. He is not relying on his own strength, he is relying on the empowerment of Ram's instruction to him. Let me be the instrument carrying the will of Ram, find Sita. Those are nice words, and how to internalize those nice words. It's a cultivation. Bhakti is a, in the words of Rupa Goswami, is a type of cultivation. Okay, moving on. Yearning for the goal is another feature of Sharanagati. And the classic here is Shabari. She wanted to be with her guru, Sage Matanga, when he left this world. He wanted to go with her. She wanted to go with him. And he said, not now, you can come and join later. For now, I want you to stay here and wait for Ram. Serve him this way, that way. And then you can come. So just with faith in the words of her preceptor, she waited and waited. I am too old to stay in this withered body, and I am longing to go to my guru's place to serve them. Not that they are in need of any maidservant, but I very much need to be in their presence as a maidservant. My teachers told me to stay here until your arrival, and you have arrived. So, fructifying my teacher's instructions, now I'm enjoying the result of subservience to my teachers, that is, release from the cycle of birth and death. I know that you are the unknowable, but I now know you, because I have seen you. Hence I am redeemed by my gurus. This is the result of my good fortune of serving faithfully my teachers. So that the instruction here is faithful service to preceptors helps bring one to the position of receiving the fullness of the ultimate shelter's mercy as part of the science or the system of surrender. Another symptom of surrender is knowing where not to place your surrender. Keeping your distance from all unwholesome association. A lot of this is directed to Ravana. Anyway. Because of the benedictions given by Brahma, the demigods were unable to control. Even Brahma himself was unable to control once the benediction was given. The benediction that was given was upheld by Vishnu. But Vishnu also penetrated within that benediction and destroyed him. Anyway, I'm not so clear on this. Well, yeah, here's one that's clear. When we discussed about Vibhishan, I'm thinking I'm going to have to spend a lot of time on this topic, because this topic is meant to be kind of like an introductory topic to the whole session. People, you all have some idea of these personalities. The audience in front of me, the Chinese devotees, they really don't have an idea. So it's all completely new. I may have to put this last or something, I'm not sure. A little puzzling. Anyway, when we were discussing about Vibhishan, how did he maintain his Krishna consciousness? How did he maintain his strength of bhakti in that place? Now, Sita, she's the goddess of fortune, but you know she was tormented terribly. But he grew up there. Vibhishan spent his whole life in that place with, you know, bad people, rakshasa people, terrible people. And his elder brother, who he was by culture looking up to, and wouldn't heed any good advice. And so how did he keep it together without association is a question that has come up. Well, one of the things that we learned about Vibhishan in his youth is he studied the scriptures very carefully. His father was an exalted personality, super personality. And from his father he learned the scripture. So that was within him. And that was his protection. And his good wife was also a good devotee, and that was the primary association he had. He and his good wife and the teachings from his father. And that kept him going. But he knew to not take shelter. He did not become influenced by Ravana's association. He tried his best, something similar to Vidura, tried his best to help persuade Dhritarashtra and Duryodhana and others to abide by virtue. He wasn't able to be successful. So at a certain point he left. So the same time at a certain point Vibhishan left. So knowing where to not place your receiving association. There's this other point here about Maricha. Maricha came to the point of understanding, we discussed this the other day, Maricha came to the point of understanding not exactly that Ram was the personality of Godhead, although he explained, he's as powerful as Vishnu. Didn't say he was Vishnu. He's as powerful as Vishnu. Ravan, don't mess. But he didn't have Vishnu Bhakti or Ram Bhakti. And he didn't have Ram Bhakti because he didn't have any association of devotees. Vibhishan had dissociation. Sugriva was also very fearful, but Sugriva had association of Hanuman. And so he was able to take shelter of friendship and service to Ram. It would have been a different story if Maricha had some devotee association somewhere along the way. The story would have been different. I think I'll just cover one more item. The next item is in the teachings about Sharanagati. having the association of Guru is essential. Not just there's good association, but specifically also Guru. And, you know, the two examples in Ramayana, the primary one, well, there's several. The primary one is Hanuman. I'll just read. Ram can find Sita on his own and even annihilate hordes of demons, what to speak of Ravana. The Supreme Lord gives an opportunity for living entities to reestablish their relationship with him by giving opportunities of service. Sugriva was given such an opportunity, but Sugriva was unable to fathom it. Even after hearing Ram had killed 14,000 Rakshasa soldiers single-handedly, he wasn't convinced about the power of Ram. He needed multiple visible demonstrations of his power. Conditioned souls don't easily recognize the way the Supreme Lord is assisting them in their journey, and they have multiple apprehensions about the Supreme Lord. On the other hand, Hanuman, as the Guru, reposes faith on the Supreme Lord after having his darshan just once. That was it. He didn't display anything, just being in his presence. Hanuman as the Guru, it took an Acharya like Hanuman to present the Lord and the value of his service to Sugriva. I'm just going to read. In the pursuit of self-realization, this is another point, point number two. In the pursuit of self-realization, conditioned souls do not have the vision to see the different expansions and arrangements of the Lord in the right perspective. For example, Hanuman notices the attitude of Sugriva in not offering a seat to Lakshmana. You familiar? When they were all together at the top of Rishimukh Mountain, and Hanuman speaks on behalf of Ram and says, not only is he a good guy, but you can achieve your purposes through him, you should make friendship with him. And just hearing from Sugriva, hearing from Hanuman, Sugriva was, got it, I'm okay. My fears and apprehensions have subsided. So from the tree underneath they were sitting, he set some leaves as a sitting place for Ram and himself. And Hanuman noticed. So Hanuman made a sitting place for Lakshmana. This pastime indicates that Ramayana is indicating to us to observe the activities of the Acharya to progress in spiritual life. Sugriva would have to learn this lesson the hard way later, when he is taught to respect Lakshmana after his defeat to Vali. You know what that respect to Lakshmana was? Here's the respect to Lakshmana. This is from commentary. I'm going to have to rewrite this whole thing because it's not me speaking, it's him. Shyamakund. The pastime was, Ram, after displaying his power, Sugriva said, I'm convinced you can do it. So Ram said, let's go. Let's go to the palace where Vali is and call him out, have a fight, and I'll slay him. And they didn't slay him. He got beat up, nearly dead. So Vali went running for his life. And when he got to Rishimukh Mountain, Vali stopped because of the curse. So then Sugriva said, why you didn't do something? If I thought you were just going to mislead me, I never would have. He's so powerful, I'd lose every time. You know why he would lose every time? You know the secret behind it? He had this pendant that was given to him by Indra. Remember? Do you want to say? I'll say.
Half of the power of
his opponent.
Opponent would be given to him.
So his power plus half of his opponent's power, he's going to win. Whatever the, however strong the opponent is, half goes to, so I would never have gone. So why'd you mislead me like this? And Ram said, well, I couldn't tell who you were. You look so much alike. I didn't want to shoot an arrow and hit the wrong guy. So Lakshman, get a garland. You know, anyway, when I read that so many times, I'm wondering, a little vine from a tree in the midst of fighting, it's not going to stay on him either. So how is he going to make a distinction when the vine gets ripped off from their wrestling and fighting? But it was a principle. The principle was Lakshman had to garland him, so the gesture of Sugriva bowing before Lakshmana to receive the garland. Okay, now we're good. And just like this nice description of what Ram would see as something sufficient for giving shelter. I think I'm going to have to rewrite this whole section. But it's nice. So it's essential. Even this little gesture of taking shelter. Here's a nice Prabhupada story I'm going to end. You probably heard this one before. Have any of you seen pictures of, if not even visited, the 26 Second Avenue storefront? You've been there? Someday if you go to the lovely city of New York after this COVID thing is over or something, you'll see it. It looks like a subway car shape. It's long and narrow. It's not lovely by any stretch of the imagination. It's very, very simple. And on the far end is the door, and the back end is a window. And right next to the window, there's a little miniature bathroom, just like a sink and toilet, and that's it. And so Prabhupada sat at the far end, and people would come in at the doorway end. And there's a storefront window on that side. And it's just walls, and it's a subway car kind of shape. So Prabhupada was... He'd lead kirtan and give a class, and everyone would be assembled. And one day, a drunken man came stumbling, smelled like, you know, a skunk, and went stumbling through the devotees, and the devotees were like wanting to stop the man, and Prabhupada let him continue. And he pulled out of a bag some rolls of toilet paper and put some rolls of toilet paper on the toilet and went stumbling back out. And it turns out that, you know, that man had received prasadam from the devotees and he wanted to do something to reciprocate. So his reciprocation was bring some toilet paper. And Prabhupada, so the devotees were like restless. Sanskrit Marsh told the story. They were like, you know, that guy disrupted Prabhupada's class. And Prabhupada said, no, you know, his devotional service has begun. I mean, it wasn't a squirrel, and it wasn't a vulture, and it wasn't a bear, and it wasn't a monkey. It was a Bowery bum. Not too much difference. Lower species of some kind. But his devotional service has begun. He was seeing not his intoxicated, smelly state, but something from his heart, some gesture of some service to the devotees that gave him some prasadam. Who knows how often that happened, but he wanted to do something according to his means. So, um, It's been nice spending the evening with you, learning that I really need to rewrite this. So it speaks my words, not Shamkund's words. I'm sure when he speaks, we had this experience during our visit to, it was in Pandharpur actually, after the devotees went to visit Vittal, we went to the ISKCON Pandharpur temple. And in that venue, Shamakund started narrating the 16 reasons or explanations of when Sita placed a blade of grass between herself and Ravan. What was the significance? And everyone loved it. You know, it was really complicated, but he made it interesting. And he was one of the outstanding things is as he was narrating it, he was so animated. It was like, you know, levitating. He was really energized by discussing Krishna Katha like that, Ram Katha, Sita Katha. So I'm going to have to rewrite this. This is a good experiment for me. I'm going to have to spend a lot of time, hopefully, soon. Like tomorrow or something. And I don't have to retell the whole thing. I'll just take things from it. Okay, so let's see if there's some discussion on the message of Ramayana, the process of surrender, or anything at all that you'd like to discuss. Yeah.
While you were speaking about the process of surrender, I was thinking surrender to the Lord, like, you know, doing deity service, that makes sense.
Yes.
But on a daily basis, like, you know, what does surrender mean to us? Like, you, one is chanting, definitely, but on an...
Well, the surrender is not the behavior, it's the mood of the behavior. Mm. And you use XYZ. You go to the kitchen. You go to the marketplace to buy some vegetables. You're cleaning the house. You're, you know, helping your son with his math assignment or, you know, whatever it is. Do you do that sometimes?
Yeah. She finishes his assignments.
So whatever your wifely and household and devotee duties are, it's not just the deity worship and chanting. It's all the things that you do. And that can be filled with the dedication of this to the Supreme Lord. And, you know, we're a spirit, as a family, we're, the temporary relationship is what it is. The eternal relationship is we're all connected to Krishna and we're moving toward Krishna together. And there's different parts of moving toward Krishna together. It could be all those things mentioned and more. So the Sharanagati is all those things. And it's the mood of doing those things. For the pleasure of and dependent upon the Supreme Lord to do it nicely. And then, you know, the necessary qualities and characteristics and culture that goes with a life of devotion. And that's all part of the qualities become decorations in the life of the Sharanagata devotee. And that's pleasing to Krishna. When Krishna, when you come before your deities or become before your family members or you go to the marketplace and you're wearing, displaying or carrying devotional quality, it's pleasing to Krishna. When Krishna smiles, then that's it.
Thank you, Manu. I'm reading Leela Amrita, so I always have this kind of guilt feeling, you could say, or something that, you know, there's so many devotees who have done so much, they've surrendered completely to Prabhupada, but I feel I'm I'm just only taking, I'm not giving anything anywhere back to Prabhupada. That's how I feel every time I go through the pages of Leelamrita. It's a very unexplainable kind of a feeling. Like,
is it a sad? Does it result in increase of devotional service or decrease?
Increase, definitely.
So then it's spiritual. That feeling that ends in increasing devotional service. And doesn't increasing devotional service doesn't mean quantity. It's the quality of the devotion within the service that you do. So there's spiritual humility and there is material humility. And from what your answer is, then it's a spiritual humility. That's good. And so you're not King Kong. That's okay. You're who you are. And Krishna accepts. He accepts the service of the squirrel. Ram accepts the servants of the squirrel. And Krishna is accepting your service as a little jiva, doing what you do. So the interest of Krishna goes to the quality of the devotion, not the quantity of what you're doing. When the quality of devotion is there, the way that you serve others will be carried forward by Krishna himself. That is to say, those who your life intersects with will be elevated, and then those who elevate others will elevate others, just by the quality of your Krishna bhakti. So, you know, in this stage of your life, you have your primary circle of service. Your husband and your son, and that's your service. You do it nicely. And the stage will come where, if the foundation is developed, you'll then have more discretionary time to do other things and expand your service in that way. But for now, you know, make the foundation very strong, the quality of bhakti very strong, so that when circumstances adjust, you're ready to do what opportunity Krishna gives you. That's like, you know, quantitative expansion. And, you know, grihastha life certainly has that dimension. It's purification time for, you know, taking desires and bringing them to the spiritual position as much as I can or we can together as a family. And that's your responsibility at this stage of your life. And you grow it. You grow that bhakti element in this, you know, during this stage. And other stages will come and other opportunities will come. Krishna will, you know, if you have the desire for increasing, it will happen. You know, one of the practical things, two of the practical things, is, you know, reading with ladies and parenting discussions with others who are parents. That's, you know, that's substantial. And, you know, how that can take shape depends. And so then you have to prepare yourself to be able to have discussions with others on those topics, the reading topics and the parenting topic. But, you know, that's appropriate at this stage of your life. You know, it's quantitative increase. And it's, you know, it's, so if it's small, that's quite okay. Do it in a quality way, then it's big. Yes.
Guru Maharaj, can you please repeat the Abhideya process for, you said it is different for the Gaudiya Sampradaya, but it's different for Sri Sampradaya.
Want to hear it again?
Yes.
Sambandha Abhideya Prayojana. according to the commentators on Ramayana, Sambandha is we're eternally a servant of the Lord. The Prayojana is we're engaged in service to the Lord. The means to engage in service to the Lord is the Sharanagati process. That's the Abhideya from their perspective.
And our Abhideya from the Gaudiya Sampradaya is the Bhakti process.
Yes. Where everything has a relationship, we and everything has a relationship with the Source. To engage in activities in relation to the Source, ourselves and things, that's Abhideya. The Bhakti process is the Abhideya. And the Prayojana is the fruit of that devotional process. Prema, Prayojana. Okay?
So in that, one question comes, Guru Maharaj, is there are two processes that can lead to the goal.
No.
I mean, one is bhakti, another is...
No. They're just, it's a model or a paradigm to look at the scripture. You can look at it through this lens, you can look at it through that lens.
I just had a quick clarification, Maharaj. Is it true that when Hanuman actually went to talk to Sita, Vibhishan helped him? Did he meet him there? And I've seen like some...
There is one... I was curious about the same thing because I saw a painting of Hanuman looking like a Brahmana because he could change shapes at the door of Vibhishan. When he first went. That's not, there's a painting like that. I haven't found it in any of the renderings of Ramayana that I've come across. But it must be in one of the renderings of Ramayana. But it's not standard. What's standard is he searched everywhere, couldn't find Sita, he was very puzzled, I can't go back, maybe I should give up my life, I can't go back and say I couldn't find Sita. No, I can't do that. I have to find Sita. And he became more determined than, the Ashok Garden. So went there. So, but no mention of Vibhishan in that first visit. No mention, commonly. Does that answer your question?
Yeah. I was just wondering if he met him already, like when Vibhishan came. Like Hanuman knew Vibhishan, who he was, and you know if he had met him and if he had helped him.
There's no indication that he already met him, because when he first came in for landing, he introduced himself by name. So apparently it was known. I mean, with the Bhagavatam, it's much crisper. With Ramayana, there's so many versions. It's hard, you know. So Valmiki is the gold standard, but then there's so many other versions that are also accepted by Vaishnavas as proper renderings of Ramayana. So the exact language would require going to the Sanskrit and saying in the Valmiki Ramayana. Did he introduce himself, and how did he your question is, did he recognize him? Had he seen him before? How did he know he's who he is? So he must have made some introduction. I'm Vibhishan, brother of Ravan. I've come to take shelter of Ram. Please ask him if he'll accept me. So some kind of little introduction like that, but no indication that he saw him before. But one of the things that Hanuman was good at doing is just, as he says, reading the face. You know, that face is the index to the mind. So by seeing his face and by hearing his voice, I can understand about his character. I trust him. He's worthy of our trust.
Tail was set to fire. Did Vibhishana?
No, he was in the assembly. He's the one that said, "You can't kill him. You can punish him." You can't punish, you can't kill a messenger. You can punish appropriately. So then the idea came. Anyone else? You have something? No? Okay. Okay, do we have anything online?
Yes. A question from Sanchari. Are all Acharyas Trikalagya, or is it specific only to personalities like Srila Vyasadeva? How do we understand how the Acharya analyzes and makes decisions on important situations, especially those that have generational effects and or consequences?
Well, yes and no. It's not a, you know, I'm a card-carrying Trikalagya Acharya. And I'm in this other category. Well, I don't have Trikalagya, but I'm an Acharya. It's not cut and dry like that. So her question is, do all Acharyas? So, no. Jayadvaita Swami, let's take Srila Prabhupada as an Acharya. Jayadvaita Swami once asked Prabhupada, I believe it was in Durban, how are we to understand, maybe it wasn't in Durban, how are we to understand when the spiritual master can't, he's trying to recall a verse, but he can't remember the verse? Something like that. And Prabhupada's answer was, the spiritual master is not omniscient. Then he knows what Krishna needs him to know. That's what the Acharya is. So in response to her question, what an Acharya can foresee or not foresee, it's totally variable according to the personality and their relationship with Krishna. And they can see what Krishna wants them to see. And can, to what degree can they see the future? Well, according to the degree that Krishna gives them the vision to see. And it's different. Specifically with Beyond Vyas, it's that, you know, her question is like Vyas. We know specifically when it's indicated specifically, like Narada. Narada was Trikalagya. He could understand things past, present, future as well. So there's my answer. It's up to Krishna to reveal what Krishna reveals to his devotees. Worldly events or otherworldly events, Krishna reveals what he wants to reveal. The Acharya is one who's fully dependent on Krishna to reveal what Krishna wants to reveal. And that's the relationship of an Acharya to Krishna.
This question is from Preeti Mataji, Preeti Srinivasan. Thanks for this wonderful series on the Ramayana personalities and Sharanagati. After Maricha was killed by Rama, was he liberated?
Yes.
What do the Acharyas comment on that?
Yes, he was liberated. Yes.
Question from Atulya Mataji. In very difficult circumstances, like someone bullying or emotionally attacking...
I mean, he called Ram's name. Excuse me, Lakshman Sita's name. Go ahead. Atulya's question.
In very difficult circumstances, like someone bullying or emotionally attacking... what is the best way to maintain one's devotional qualities and still be able to respond appropriately?
There's more? What are the qualities? Read her specific question again.
What is the best way to maintain one's devotional qualities and still be able to respond?
The best way to maintain one's devotional qualities, whether it's a bullying or something, or thising or thatting, is a very strong connection with the personality of Godhead. You know, this is right on the topic of Sharanagati. how one individual compared to any other number of n number of other individuals are going to respond to a particular circumstance is going to differ from person to person. But the way, while there's variegatedness in their response internally and externally, the thing that's consistent is this tat tenu kampam verse. It's not deviating, not budging an inch from the position of shelter and the personality of God. It's exactly what the verse says. It's our theme or anthem in dealing with unfortunate circumstances. Troubling circumstances. You stay fixed at the lotus feet of the personality of God no matter what. And then your devotional qualities and your discrimination doesn't leave you. You may not have a solution, but you don't leave your Krishna consciousness.
Another question from Preeti Mataji. Is it that the connection between the offering of a seat and later garlanding Sugriva by Lakshman mentioned in Sri Vaishnava commentaries? Could you please confirm?
Yes.
A question from Amara Mataji. How surrender and endeavor are related? In progressive chanting, both are necessary.
Yes.
But feels like contrast.
No. Somebody, I'm trying to remember exactly how Prabhupada answered. Sometimes we hear, God helps those who help themselves. You've heard that one? So how is, fully depending upon Krishna and God helps those who help themselves? And Prabhupada's answer was, they're not contradictory. What's helping yourself mean? You're helping yourself is taking your spiritual position of being fully dependent upon Krishna and serving Him. That's helping yourself. And God helps those persons who are fully dependent upon Him and at the same time engage in His service. They're not at all contradictory. And so you take making some endeavor doesn't mean you don't fully depend. And fully depend doesn't mean you don't take endeavor. They're not contradictory. They're quite compatible and natural.
Don't think this is a question. Sri Ram, correct madam, he is Shyamakund Prabhu, right?
Yeah, Shyamakund.
So he says, replying to Ramapada Swami live page, according to Ramanuja's commentary.
This is Shyamakund speaking?
Yes. Yeah, he is.
Sending a text message?
Yes.
What time is it in India? Huh?
6:30, 6:45.
Okay. 5:45.
Should I read?
Yeah, go ahead. I'm interested.
According to Ramanuja's commentary, the relinquishment of dharmas corresponds to relinquishing expiatory rites that are meant to overcome the result of previous sinful activities. Examples of expiatory rites which are not required in the process of bhakti are sacrifices such as Krichra, Chandrayana, Kushmanda, Vaishvanara, Vratapati, Pavitreshti, Trivrit, Agnishtoma, etc., which are of manifold varieties and which are difficult to perform on account of the brevity of life. I don't know.
I don't either.
So, maybe he's replying to this question, Maharaj, I'm thinking. There's a question in Ramanujacharya Sri Bhashya for Bhagavad Gita 1866. He says, abandon bhakti yoga also. How do we understand that? Relinquishing all dharmas means the complete abandonment of the notion of agency, proprietorship, results, etc. in the practice of karma, jnana and bhakti yogas, which are the means for attaining the highest good when done as divine service. So maybe he's answering to that. So
he's giving an answer to that question.
Yeah.
Some people ask that question. He provided the answer before he provided the question.
No, the question was there. I think it got skipped to the that part, the page. So I started reading that. When I went backwards, I saw that.
Could you just keep it really simple and tell me what he's asking? Without reading it, tell me what he's asking.
I think the surrender in 1866 means we should we should give up karma.
Everything including bhakti.
Bhakti, yes.
So he's asking, what does that mean? He's asking me that question?
The question is asked by someone in the group, but I think Shyamakund Prabhu is replying to that question. Is what my understanding is.
Okay, fantastic. Next.
This question is from Radhika. I always thought Sharanagati was Abhideya in Sri Vaishnavism. Can you help me understand this more?
Well, that's what we just said 5 times. So the answer is, you're right. That's it. So there was a question in a group that he's involved with, that why does Ramanujacharya speak like this?
Here, Guru Maharaj, there is a question. In this forum that...
Which forum?
The live, your live page is live.
Somebody raised that question in the live forum.
Yes.
And then he gave an answer in the live forum.
Yes.
Okay, so you read the answer first.
Yes, because the page went there, so I just thought
okay.
It's a question.
Okay. So I may be asked that question in the future. You can send me what his answer is.
Yes. Well, one more question I missed. For a sadhana bhakta, which stage of bhakti out of 9 defines complete surrender?
Which one?
Which stage of bhakti, like adho shraddha to prema, defines complete surrender?
Well, there are 2 different models. The one model is the stages of bhakti, and the other model is the limbs or angas of surrender. So one can have full surrender in any one of the stages of bhakti. Because it's one of the angas. So it can be there in any one of the stages. It's not exclusive in the prema stage. It can be in any one of the stages. Yeah.
From Amara Mataji. When we are trying to hear the sound more and more, the mind takes me on the ride. So how to apply surrender and endeavor, Maharaj?
Practice. Understand, you know, the principles and apply the principles in practice and practice and practice. That's how. Okay. Something came up, huh? Go ahead. Go for it.
How many souls are in the whole entire, like...
You're a broad thinker, huh? Too many to count. There's a Sanskrit word for that. Asankhyataha. Sankhya means count, and asankhyataha means too many to count. It's finite. It's not unlimited. But it's too many to count. Asankhyataha. So we say unlimited. But it's limited. This is not... I want to end, even if there's something else coming in. I'd like to end. Okay. You have something? Go ahead. But the online can just go on all night, so.
Hare Krishna Guru Maharaj, why did Rama go through all the pain of having separation from Sita even though he could have just easily...
Smashed Ravan and the whole deal.
Why did he go through all the pain?
There's several answers. One of them, Hanuman gives. And it's not a favorite answer, but it's Hanuman's answer. Ram wanted to show, this is found in Bhagavatam, Canto 5, Chapter 19. You can look it up. It's right towards the very beginning of that chapter. Hanuman says, there's no question of separation. They're eternally connected. There's no question of separation. Forget it. There's no separation. But Ram wanted to show that if there's too much attachment between male and female, you're going to suffer. He wanted to show that. So that was one of the reasons. Another reason is the mood of Vipralamba Bhav, the mood of love and separation. Because it's not only Sita being kidnapped, but it's Sita being sent away to the ashram of Valmiki because some foolish person was criticizing. So he was showing the well-being of the citizens is above my own interests. But it was Vipralamba Bhav again. And then, you know, the deepest of all reasons is it's his lila to engage others in this process of reconnecting Sita to Ram. Because materialists want to enjoy fortune or wealth or, you know, opulence separate from the personality of Godhead. So he was demonstrating such persons will be destroyed. So that's part, you know, it's a lila of his to engage others, the vanaras and everybody, in that whole mission of reaching out, because here we have the material world where people are very eagerly trying to enjoy the facilities of God's energy apart from him. And God is there to standing behind those who are representatives of Dharma, and he'll uphold the principles of Dharma. He'll protect those who are upholding the principles of Dharma. So it's as many layers of reasons behind, but you know, bottom line, there's no separation. It's a lila, and lila has some purposes. Okay.